What's going on, everybody, and welcome to episode 38 of the Mental Dive Podcast, where we talk anything and everything sports psychology and mental performance. I'm your host, Taylor Staden. On today's podcast, I am so excited to be joined by Justin Schaefer. Justin is a professional baseball pitcher. He spent time with my Toronto Blue Jays. It's funny, I say that as if I own the team. I'm just a fan. Anyways, with the Toronto Blue Jays, the Cincinnati Reds, as well as most recently with the Miami Marlins. There's a lot of topics covered in today's podcast, and I really, really hope you all enjoy it today. So without further ado, everybody, Justin Schaefer. So Justin, really, really appreciate you joining me for a podcast today. Being from the Toronto area and getting to interview a former Blue Jays, definitely really, really cool. So how are you doing today, Justin?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. It's definitely nice to catch up back with Toronto people, because that was great place. There's nothing better than Toronto.
Mm. Was that your initial reaction when you were first drafted to the Blue Jays? Or how did that kind of all play out, you know, having to move to a different country and whatnot?
No, it was not. That was like the one team I didn't want to be drafted by. But it ended up being the best. Like, I have never been to any city that is as nice as Toronto so far. Like, I think people always have that initial reservation, especially when free agents sign and like, out of the country and being in a different country, but there's no city like Toronto. That is one of the most beautiful places. I feel like you get the big city feel without feeling like everything's on top of you, like you do with like Chicago or New York City, for examples. Like, there's no better city that I've been in than Toronto.
Right on. I don't want to comment too much just because I am quite biased, but I do agree Toronto is a great spot. So one thing I always like to do, Justin, when I have athletes on the podcast is I love to get your story, you know, dating back to what got you involved in baseball, what drives you, and how did you get up to this point, getting to play in the MLB?
Yeah, I mean, baseball-wise, I've played baseball ever since I was 3 or 4 years old. I don't even know. I played growing up, being from Florida, you can play year-round. So I pretty much played everything, though, growing up, soccer, football, basketball, baseball, tennis during the like summers is like a summer camp. Like I did everything. But then when I got to later, it became just football and baseball. And then ultimately had to decide between the two after my senior year and chose baseball and went to Florida as an outfielder. I guess technically got recruited as a two-way guy, but didn't really ever pitch, hardly ever. Some things happened. Wasn't really feeling like playing baseball anymore. I really kind of wanted to just quit and stop doing that. And coach was like, hey, we're going to pitch you. And I'm like, it's okay. Like, I'd rather just sit on the bench and do nothing. And I happened to be throwing harder than I'd ever thrown in my life out of nowhere and threw really well. And it was a big game against Florida State. So a lot of people there, and just kind of got me seen. And then kind of pitched the last month of the year and was very inconsistent, didn't really know what I was doing, but the velocity was there. So the last like two outings, it kind of really clicked, and I had a couple two or three outings in a row that I strung together, which kind of got me drafted by Toronto. And then kind of the same thing with Toronto. Like, I had a good year, bad year, kind of like inconsistent as well through there. And 2016, I think it was, maybe 17. I don't remember what it was. Might have been, it was 16 or 17. They said, hey, we're going to move you to the bullpen. Cause like I said, I was very inconsistent as a starter. I had one really, really good year, my first full season. And then I just couldn't really figure it out after that. I don't know what it was. Moved to the bullpen, and then everything kind of clicked, and I just shot right through from there. And I was in the big leagues after the next year. I went from high A to triple A that first year as a bullpen guy, and then the next year made it to the big leagues.
It's crazy to think that pitching was the last position you would want to play, and then within maybe the span of 5 years you're pitching at the major league level. That's just something, eh?
Yeah, like, I mean, I always pitched growing up, and until I got to high, like, I was, people that know me, like, they'd make fun of me because, like, I threw really, really hard at a young age. Like, I was throwing 90 at 14 years old.
Wow.
And then I just never got any harder. I just like all the way through high school, stayed the same speed. And even through like, I would throw in inner squads in college and I would still be the same. I'd be like 88, 90, maybe touch 91. And I just never got any harder. It was like weird. And then that game, they randomly threw me and all of a sudden I was touching 95. It was just weird. So yeah, that's kind of how it worked out. Like I always did pitch growing up, but I just threw really, really hard. And at that age, no one sees that velocity. So I just dominate guys just throwing because I could outstuff people and people hadn't seen velocity like that. But once you got to high school, 90 no longer was very hard for at least where I'm from. It wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. This past MLB season, as I'm sure you know, has been very, very interesting, just like everything else in the world is during these times. And I'd love to kind of get your take on the perspectives of the home field advantage during playing during COVID. You know, with the away players having to be cooped up in their hotel rooms and from the home team perspective, having no fans. How has that whole kind of experience been like for you? And what are your perspectives on that?
Honestly, like, the fans, the energy is definitely different, but once it comes down to competing, like you don't really notice. Like, obviously, in high pressure situations, you lose the pressure from the fans, or like sometimes things can start to spiral and you let the fan noise get into your head and that. But for the most part, like you're so locked in on what you need to do, you don't really notice in that sense. Like you're just you versus the hitter, and that's how. Whether there's fans or not, that's ultimately what it is, you versus the hitter. The road is a little bit difficult because, like you said, it's not – I like getting up, going to get a coffee, going to get breakfast, going – like, just get up and get moving. Like, just walk around, even if it's, like, 15, 20-minute walk to get a coffee or, like, just get out. You can't do that on the road. So that part isn't fun. So you're kind of – that part is definitely different. I don't know – some people probably doesn't bother me like it did like bother me. I like to get up and get just move around a little bit, not sit in a hotel bed the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
And at home you obviously can get up, make breakfast or walk to get coffee. So that part is definitely, I feel like, an advantage if you're the kind of person that likes to get up and get moving around.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So it really at the root of things, it just sounds like a lot of these protocols perhaps affected and altered your routines. You know, like I know a lot of athletes are very routine heavy. They like to do things a certain way on game day in the morning. And you know, for you, maybe that was getting a coffee and breakfast and just getting out and about. What are some other ways that maybe the protocols affected your routines and how did you adapt?
I mean, in that, I feel like that's the biggest thing that it changed was just the fact that you can't leave the hotel at home. Obviously you can go around. You don't really go out to restaurants at night anymore with teammates if you wanted to do that. You just grab to go and go home. I guess outside of baseball, even at home, you don't really have much life. You might be able to walk, go get a coffee or get a takeout, but you're not sitting down and eating restaurants anymore. But adapting wasn't like that hard. I mean, they have it placed. Like on the road, you have testing at this time, breakfast pickup at this time. Like it is regimented of what you have. So your routine is not your routine, but they have based your routine and everyone's routine is going to be the same. So after you get used to it, it becomes your routine kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So how long do you think it took you to kind of adjust to a new routine?
Not that long. Like once you get used to having to do the spit testing every day or every other day, you kind of just get used to it. Like, you know that your day, I start collecting spit on the way. I do one, I can got to the point where now I can just do one spit and done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. Cool. And then I guess just kind of leading up to playing during COVID, there's a long freeze. And mm-hmm. You know, again, that fall back too on, you know, having affected and altered routines. What are some ways that maybe you stayed sharp during the long COVID freeze?
I mean, I wouldn't say I stayed sharp. I did not throw well this season at all. And I was shut down all spring training, but I was very fortunate. I was with Cincinnati at that still time, and the minor league coordinator had a gym in his backyard. So I was able to go over there twice a week, and he would write me a workout, and twice a week I was able to lift. But as far as throwing, it was tough. Like, eventually I they had someone for me to play catch with, and I started a throwing program. But for a while, it was me throwing into a fence. My fiance would stand next to the fence and then roll the ball back to me. So, I mean, that was tough. But, yeah, I wouldn't say I stayed sharp. This year has been a mess for sure.
What do you mean by mess, just in terms of, like, losing the control with pitching, or –
I missed all spring training because I was having elbow issues, and now I'm having shoulder issues. So, like, I'm done for the year. That's why, like, can do whatever you want. I'm at home now. I'm about to go see Dr. Andrews on Monday to get a second opinion on, figure out what's going on. I was throwing 88 again when I'm usually, like, last year I was throwing 94, 96, touching 97. So, I was just all over. It didn't feel right this year, and I don't know what the reason was, because I felt like I was ready to go when I came into spring training, and it just was not coming out right.
Okay, so I guess just while we're kind of on that topic, did you ever try maybe any particular strategies to, like, you know, help leverage the mental game to help you get back to, you know, where you were before, like throwing 95 or?
Mentally, no, but going back to last year, so everything was going right last year for me in Toronto. Like, we traded all those guys. I became late inning. I had just got engaged. Everything in my life was going right in that extent. And out of nowhere, I had a panic attack. So that kind of sent me in a whirlwind last year. It was like the last month of the year, I was throwing really, really well. And then I started throwing terrible. Cause like every single day, once they classified it as a panic attack, I just kept having them. Cause I was like, I couldn't control the first one. How am I going to control it from happening again? And I just kept having them every day. So like, I wasn't able to focus on what I was doing anymore. I was more worried about the panic attack and like, is it going to come? And at that point, I was just like, get me through the season. I'll get to the offseason, regroup, because I thought it was all – that would just happen. At the time, it was only happening at the baseball field. And then with like 2 or 3 weeks – I think 2 weeks left in the season, out of nowhere, I had one at my apartment in Toronto, and I was by myself. And so then it just didn't matter where I was. I started having them all the time. So that was kind of – the mental stuff I had to deal with this off season was trying to get that taken care of, to where I stopped having panic attacks every day.
I mean, you probably know this, but players, like, the more I've talked about it with guys, there's a lot of players that have experienced it, but they don't know that other, like, they don't talk about it. So no one knows. Like, a lot of players that I've talked to, like, they might've been able to get it under control quicker and able to, like, realize that something was wrong with me. I had never felt that in my life. And I physically thought something was wrong. Like, I thought something was wrong with me. I thought I was having a heart attack when it happened. And they never gave me any testing. They were just like, all right, you had a panic attack. And I never had that reassurance that, like, health-wise, I was fine. So, like, I was like, something's wrong. I didn't accept that it was a panic attack. I was like, I'm not stressed. Everything is going great in my life. It doesn't make any sense. And so, like, until this last spring training when I got a full physical again and everything came back clean, like, that's when I was like, all right, like, it's obviously panic attack, like, chill out. If it happens, it happens. It'll pass. It's not that big of a deal. And the Cincinnati Reds had a great person there for me. It was kind of a blessing that they picked me up, because they had someone at the field that was a mental counselor who specialized in, like, this kind of stuff. And she was awesome. And she got me the help that I needed. We did like every kind of treatment you could think of to figure out what would work for me. And she was great. Like, I still talk to her now. Like, she didn't like abandon me once I got rid of Santa. Like, she's still the person I call if I feel that I need someone to talk to. And now point, when I call her, it's just to see how she's doing at this point. We don't even really talk about it, cause I've been doing, you know, fine in that extent. So, but she was great. And she was really on top of everything and was that, like, support system that I needed at that time.
Right. So I guess when you say that it's something that a lot of players seem to go through but not talk about, do you think that's because of the stigma around it? Maybe they don't want people, you know, having the wrong idea about them or seeing them in a certain light, or why do you think it's not talked about?
I don't think they know what it is. Like, if I didn't say, like, I feel like I'm having a heart attack and I didn't get rushed into the trainer's office, I wouldn't have known what it was. Mm-hmm. I would have thought it was just something weird. Like, I say this till this day. I think if they hadn't classified it as a panic attack, it would have never spiraled. Cause I would have just thought something was weird. I was dehydrated. I didn't have enough food in my system. Cause I just started getting really lightheaded, and then I just started dripping in sweat. And then all of a sudden, like, it just spiraled really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I would have just taken it as like, I didn't get my body prepared properly, like eating wise. Like, cause I kind of felt hungry and I kind of felt tired, and then it just like all spiraled. And I think if they wouldn't have qualified it as a panic attack, it wouldn't have happened again. I just would have chalked up as that something was weird that day. So I think a lot of players, one, probably don't know what it was when it was happening until you start talking about it. And they're like, yeah, I've had that happen to me before too. And two, like you said, I just think that a lot of players just don't think about it. They're like, I know with Toronto, like, I don't know of any players in Toronto. I didn't talk about it as much. But in Toronto, I don't know if there was any other players that had experienced that. So you kind of just didn't – they couldn't really relate. I just think that they don't realize that how common it is.
Okay, so if there's maybe any baseball players listening right now who are going through a similar thing, what would you suggest for them to do?
For me, it was just talking about it. Like, right now, I hope to eventually cycle off of it. Right now I'm on medication, and it took a while to figure out what dosage and what kind of medication would worked. So I'm hoping to cycle off of it eventually. But for this year, I needed to get where I felt mentally stable again and wasn't having panic attacks every day. And it obviously was a very short time period that I had to get it ready, because I wanted to be ready for this season and be able to worry about performing, not worry about mentally. But I think the biggest thing was to realize, like, I'm safe. I'm healthy. It sucks when it's happening, but it will pass. And the more you realize that you're safe and it will pass, the less the fear of it happening. Because when you have the fear of it happening, the worse they get, and it feels like they last forever. But the less, like, you fear it, you feel it coming on, you're like, all right, I know what you are. And it kind of, like, a lot of times will subside before it even gets to that point of a full panic attack. You're like, all right, I know what it is. So just realizing, like, you're safe. If you need, like, for me, the big thing was, like, I had that full physical. If you need to get an EKG or stuff to make you have that peace of mind that you're healthy, like, I say do it. Like, I wish I would have had an EKG right when it happened, because I think that would have helped as well. But just realizing, like, you're safe, and for me, like, talking about it helped. Like, the more you talk to people about it, they're like, yeah, I've experienced that too. Like, I didn't know my sister had experienced, like, hers was very individualized. She would only get it when driving in traffic, but I had no idea. But then when I had it, she was like, oh, like, I have them all the time when I drive in traffic. Like, if I'm going through big cities, I have to have my husband drive, she would say. But two, like, at that same point, you eventually got to face it too. Like, the more you put yourself in that situation, if you know what your trigger was, like, for me, it was hard because I didn't know what my trigger was. I still don't know what my trigger is. But if you know what triggers it, as much as it's going to suck, put yourself in that situation over and over and over again, and you're going to realize you're going to be alive. You're going to end up being healthy. And the more you do it, the more you're like, all right, I'm fine. Like, it's going to eventually pass, and the fear of it is no longer going to happen. But a lot of times you have that fear and you don't want to put yourself in that situation again. And then it just builds and builds and builds. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like how I feel like it gets worse.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a lot of it.
Like, I don't.
Sorry, go on.
I was saying, like, there's just a lot of books too. Like, I'm reading Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins right now. Great book. If you have read it, or if anyone, it's awesome. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, meditation, obviously. Like, I started meditating. I never meditated. I thought it was stupid, didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like, started meditating. For me, I usually just do it at night before bed, even if it's a simple 5 minutes, just concentrating on breathing. What you hear all the time, but you don't really think it does anything until you actually experience that feeling.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So from what I hear, it seems like a lot of it for you is based around mindfulness, around awareness, acceptance. And then now you mentioned you do meditation, breathing. when you do your meditation, is that maybe through a guided script? Do you do it yourself because you've practiced it so much and you've become competent at it? Like, how do you do your meditation at night?
I do both. Sometimes it's me, at the beginning it was always guided. I would do that. And now I've actually bought this app called Syncuition, and it, uses binaural beats. So you put your headphones on and it almost makes you feel like you're in different places. So like the first time I listened to it, it was an intro, and it literally made me feel like I was like in a rainforest, and like the sounds like just kind of like go around your head because of the headphones, and it makes you like feel like you're surrounded. And that has nothing but sounds. It's like everyday sounds of rain, birds, stuff like that. And so that became like the one I would do before bed, because a lot of times I wouldn't even get through it. As I'm doing the breathing and just listening to the sounds, I'd like an hour later, I'd wake up and realize I had my headphones in still. But now, like, sometimes I haven't done a good job of this, because like I feel like I've been mentally a lot better. So sometimes I don't take the time to like sit there and do it for the 20-30 minutes. But I usually, even if it's for 5 minutes, just really concentrate on like, just like, even if it's the box breathing, 5 seconds in, hold, 5 seconds out, hold. Now with the book, Can't Hurt Me on audio. Sometimes I'll just lay there, listen to the audio book, and meditate while listening to the audio book, like meditate on what I'm hearing in the audio book. So that's kind of what I've been. So it kind of has evolved. At first, it was always guided, though. Like I needed it to tell me what to do. And now I realize, like, as long as you're slowing your breathing down, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. You can be on a walk and just start focusing on your breathing and you're meditating.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Having that focus point is so, so important. And I think this is one thing that I always suggest for people when they first want to start doing some mindfulness-based techniques or meditation, is always try to always start with it being guided, because it can be a little overwhelming. You don't want to have to think too much when you're doing it. So the more you can take that pressure off yourself to just let your thoughts be and to let them pass, I think is really, really important. So with you now becoming a lot more aware of mindfulness and the power of breathing and whatnot, have you perhaps tried to bridge some of those techniques you've learned there into your performance, like mid-game, maybe through like a pre-pitch routine, or between innings or pre-game?
Yes, no, I need to do a better job. I've noticed, like, since I've been on the medication and stuff, I'm good, like, doing stuff, but it's become a lot harder for me to focus. So, like, that's kind of, like, the struggle I'd have this year. Like, my mind would wander during the game, like, in the game, and, like, pitching, and I wouldn't be locked in on what I need to be doing, like, of getting the hitter out. And I think that, along with my arm, I think that had something to do with the control issues, too, because I wouldn't be completely locked in on what I'm doing, my mind would wander. Or like one time, like I remember this year, I started feeling like weird, and all of a sudden my head went to feeling weird in the middle of the game rather than being like, no, I need to get this guy out, kind of thing. So but I would say in between innings, I would, like, I'd really focus on my breathing in between, because you get that such a high while you're out there on the mound, and then all of a sudden you're sitting in the dugout getting ready for the next inning, and it's like you go from a high. So like in between innings, I would really focus on my breathing. And that was kind of like where I incorporated that into the game sense. But I need to do a better job of end game, because like I said, as soon as I feel something weird, my mind went right there, and then it consumed me rather than being able to just sit there and focus on what I'm doing. And that could be a lot of things. I know the counselor and the person with Cincinnati and the psychologist I was working with them, they think that I might have ADHD. So that could be some of it too. Like at some point they want me to get a exam to see if that's part of it, but yeah.
So I guess, so it's interesting you say that, just taking a few steps back, just about you come up from such a high inning. Like let's say there's three up, three down, you're all pumped up, you're fired up, you go to the dugout, you have to then kind of like chill out because you're trying to like, you know, relax a bit. Yeah. You go from here to there. Do you think you perform better when you're up here or maybe when you're back down here? And what are some ways you maybe get yourself to that state?
I would say that's almost something like I'm still searching for, like whether or not, like, because I feel like my whole life I've been a guy up here. Like I've been very like anxious energy to get out there. And that's like kind of what drove me. And then once I got on the mound, everything just took over. It wasn't that big of a, like, that's just what drove me. And then once I got on the mound, everything would go away. But ever since the panic attacks, like, I almost feel like I'm trying to subside that nervous, anxious energy because I don't want it to cause another panic attack, rather than being like, well, maybe that nervous, anxious injury won't make me so good. Like, that build up and like, but maybe like that's what locked me in, you know, like that got me focused on what I need to do. So like, I'd say I'm still trying to figure out like what level I need to be at where I'm mentally and completely locked in and have that adrenaline going to be in the game versus being too low and trying to downplay the situation kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Cause like, I feel like a lot of times this year I was trying to downplay like, all right, it's just a game. It's no big deal. Like mm-hmm. versus like, no, like, this is what I want to do. I want to be great at this. I need that extra adrenaline to be like, this guy's trying to take my job. Am I going to let it? Like, so, like, it's trying to find that balance point right now, I would say, of not getting to the point where I'm getting myself so anxious and so stressed out every day that it gets to a panic attack again, but also being where I'm physically able to do what I need to do. And it could be, like, I would say I probably wasn't doing the things off the field, like as far as meditating and letting baseball go off the field, which probably spiraled it. And if I feel like if I do a better job of getting my mental state better off the field, I probably can get to that high on the field because now it hasn't built up multiple days in a row, you know?
Right.
So I think that's where I need to do a better job of letting things go once I'm off the field and finding things that I like to do where my mind isn't being consumed by baseball off the field so that the stress level just keeps building up
right.
until it like then you get to the point where it just overflows and now you go into a panic attack.
Mm-hmm. Like having that disconnect, you get to baseball, you put your briefcase down, you do your job, you leave, pick it back up, and then whatever happened at the diamond stays there kind of idea.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's something a lot of athletes may have trouble with just because, you know, a lot of athletes get caught up in like, you know, a singular athletic identity. Like, I am a baseball player all the time. When really, like, a lot of baseball players, they're also, you know, their husbands, you know, their wives, their, you know, family members, they have other interests and hobbies. So I think it's just kind of like, it can be a little dangerous when you get so consumed in one identity because, you know, if one thing goes wrong with that one identity, then everything in your life kind of spirals.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, because like for me, like there's things I like to do, but I would say it's like golfing or like going, like doing something. And then in my head, I'm like, well, I can't do that. That's going to drain me for the game. But in reality, I might need to be, even though I might make me a little more tired, I need to be doing those things to be mentally able to stay. Because like, but that's like how I've always been like, oh, I want to golf, but I might have to pitch today, you know, like, so then it'll make me tired for the game. So then it always refers back to baseball. Like everything I'm doing is referring back to baseball. Like, will this put me in the best situation to be ready for the game, which matters physically, but it's not necessarily putting me where I need to be mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess transitioning a bit here, you know, you are from Florida, so you got to play for the Miami Marlins this year. And so what was it like kind of playing in front of your home, my team home fans when there's no fans there? A childhood dream, you know, got to be lived, or how did that kind of play out? I'm sure it's not as you imagined growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I ever grew up thinking of wanting to play for the Marlins or any team in Florida for that matter. I grew up being a Derek Jeter fan, so it was kind of like Yankees, which is kind of cool that he was the owner of them. And like my first meeting we had back from COVID on the Zoom, he led the meeting, so that was kind of cool. Like,
you know, oh yeah,
the guy grew up loving as a player as a meeting, so that was kind of cool. But the only difference is like Marlins or Tampa games are always broadcasted on TV, so like, you know, everyone got to see in that extent, at least usually on Fox Sports Florida or whatever, one of the two is broadcasted. So even though we weren't able to have fans, a lot of people could at least see, since it was the Marlins.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Derek Jeter, if I'm not mistaken, your MLB debut is actually against the Yankees.
It was, yes.
What was that experience like for you then? Like, you know, leading up to it, like, were you expecting to get the call against the Yanks? How'd that go?
It was pretty awesome. I mean, I was – that year I was having an out-of-body year. Like, those years are kind of the years that you don't have. Like, everything was going right. The numbers I were putting up were ridiculous. And I was – at that point, honestly, surprised I was like, oh, they kept calling up other guys, and I'm like, why am I not getting called up? Like, there's nothing else I can do. Mm-hmm. And it got closer to September, so I don't know what happened, but eventually they called me up, and it happened to be when they were playing New York. So I went from – we were in Gwinnett. So I flew from Gwinnett to New York. I had like a 6 a.m. flight. It was a 1 o'clock game. I walked in, didn't have a locker yet, because they hadn't decided who they were going to option down or DFA to make a roster move.
Yeah.
And so they finally do. I have like it was like an hour before the game. I run out, play catch. About the third or fourth inning, we were down like 10 to nothing. So then I threw my first inning ever. And I was actually facing Andujar first, Kleber second. So the first two hitters I faced since A ball. So that kind of made it a little bit easier for the fact of I – already knew how to pitch those guys because I faced them and I got them out before that. So I was confident to face those guys and I had an idea of what I would want to do. But it didn't really hit me till like after the fact of what was going on. Like I had the inning and then I realized like, you know, like that was the team I grew up watching and being my favorite team because of Derek Jeter. But then also the fact it was such a quick thing. My parents couldn't get there. I was like, well, like, I wish my parents could have been here for my debut. And it being at New York will be obviously very special to me forever. Like that's, I feel like there, Boston or like Wrigley or Dodger, like there's only a few places that I feel like are really iconic to be like, that's where you made your debut and people will be like, whoa, like, and that'll obviously always be very special.
Right. As you walked up to the mound in Yankee Stadium, was it everything you ever imagined or were you just like so dialed in, like you couldn't even really take it?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I didn't sleep at all that night. I didn't sleep. I tried to sleep on the plane, couldn't sleep on the plane. But yeah, I had that nervous, anxious energy. And then once I got on the bullpen mound, like that's how it was my whole life. I'd always be like, have that nervous, anxious energy. But once I step on the field, it just goes away. And so I stepped on that bullpen mound, started throwing, and once it happened, it kind of got locked. I just locked in and, you know, got two quick outs, and then started raining, kind of spiraled a little bit. Went from, like, two outs on 10 pitches to all of a sudden bases loaded. I hit a guy, walked a guy, and then ended up getting a ground ball to get out of it. So went from – I mean, obviously anyone will take a zero for their debut, but it went from being like – a really, really good debut of like 15 pitches to like it got a little hairy, but I mean, it was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, Justin, this has been really a lot of fun talking to you, getting to know your story and the strategy you use and everything. And one thing I'd like to say is I think it shows a lot of strength, you opening up about what you've experienced with anxiety and panic attacks. And like you said, a lot of baseball players go through it, but not a lot of them talk about it or maybe know what it is. So if there's any baseball players listening, I hope that if any of you are facing similar struggles, that you can get the help you need and that this has helped you become aware of it. So before we wrap up, Justin, is there any like kind of closing messages you'd like to share with the viewers, maybe any aspiring baseball players, like what path to take or anything along those lines?
I mean, first and foremost, like going back to like, just realize like you're not alone when it comes to anxiety. Like there's, it affects everybody in a different way. So first off, you're not alone and you will be fine. It passes and you'll get back to your normal life. But as far as kids wanting to play baseball, like, you know, have fun. Don't become consumed in just baseball because that's how it builds up the anxiety by doing, becoming like you said, your identity becomes in baseball or what you're doing. Find that balance of doing things you enjoy because I mean, when you're young, baseball is fun and that's what you do for fun. But eventually you get to a level where it is a job. It's not, you want it to be fun, but it becomes harder to be fun. And so I think that's the hardest part is like
base, like sports was always my fun. Like that was what I did for fun. And now that has become my job. So now I have to figure out what is my new fun.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like I said, I played a million sports growing up. Do play everything. Like every sport teaches you something different. That teaches your body different things. And, you know, just enjoy it. Cause there's nothing like it. The friends you make from, like, my best friends till this day are guys that I grew up playing t-ball with or mm-hmm. baseball with. So those, the relationships you create from sports and what you learn from it lasts a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, again, Justin, thank you so, so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate it, and I'll be sure to touch base with you sometime soon.
Yeah. Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that wraps it up for episode 38 of the Mental Dive podcast. Once again, I really thank Justin for taking the time to join the podcast, as well as I hope that if any of you out there are struggling with panic attacks or anxiety, that you go and get the help you need. As well, if you really enjoy the podcast, I would really appreciate it if you could take the time to leave me a review. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. That'd be great. As well, connect with me on social, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Taylor Staden, TaylorStaden, where I post content not just from the podcast, but also just other things revolving around mental performance, sports psychology, and, you know, maybe what I'm up to. Who knows? Anyways, everybody have a fantastic rest of your day, and I'm looking forward to releasing another episode for you soon. Bye for now.